You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Some stories creep into your mind. Others claw their way in and refuse to leave. Brian Asbury's Waking the Dead is here. 8 bone-chilling tales of terror and retribution brought to life by the production team behind Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and the voices of Otis Jiry, Drew Blood, and Jeff Sturtevant. Revenge. Violence. A dark humor that cuts deep. From a quadriplegic's horrifying payback to a mother's gruesome fate, Asbury holds nothing back. This is horror that stays with you. Waking the Dead, available now on Amazon and Audible. Lock the doors, turn off the lights, and press play.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling Tales for Dark Nights.
Good evening, friends, and welcome back to another spine-tingling episode of Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight we're diving into stories that remind us some connections can't be broken, no matter how much we try. Whether it's an old friend who never really left, or a past tragedy that refuses to stay buried, tonight's tales prove that some strings, once tied, never come undone. As always, thank you for tuning in and making Chilling Tales for Dark Nights part of your horror ritual. If tonight's stories send a shiver down your spine, show your support by leaving us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And if you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that thumbs up button, drop a comment, and subscribe. Just don't forget to ring that bell so you never miss a new nightmare. Want even more horror? Head over to ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and become a patron. Enjoy all of our content ad-free. Unlock exclusive members-only perks and gain early access to new stories before the rest of the world hears them. Now, sit back, relax, if you dare. And let's turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first story tonight comes from the mind of Raz T. Slasher. Childhood can be lonely, but for those with imaginary friends, that loneliness is a little easier to bear. But what happens when an imaginary friend refuses to be forgotten? When their presence lingers, long after childhood has ended. Performed by Olivia Steele, with an appearance by Jeff Sturtevant, this is My Imaginary Friend by Raz T. Slasher.
When I was a little girl, I had an imaginary friend. I think a lot of kids my age did. My imaginary friend's name was Fred. He wasn't some weird animal or creature or anything like that. Just a guy who wore a purple top hat and a bright green suit. We did all the usual things you'd expect, like tea parties and going on adventures. Sometimes he'd even read me my favorite stories. I didn't have any brothers or sisters, and my parents worked a lot, so Fred quickly became my entire world. He was a funny man, always telling me jokes. Even though I didn't always get the jokes, Fred would laugh so hard at himself that I couldn't help but laugh too. I remember one day I had just gotten off the bus on my way home from third grade, used my key to unlock the door, and found a note on the kitchen table like I always did. It was from my mom, and she told me my dinner was in the fridge. I just learned how to use the microwave recently, and I was in that phase where every excuse to use it still excited me. I grabbed the leftover lasagna from the fridge, microwaved it for a few minutes, and poured myself a glass of milk. I made quick work of my meal and headed upstairs to my bedroom to do my homework. As usual, Fred was sitting on the bed waiting for me. I smiled at him, tossed my book bag on the floor, and pulled out what I needed to get the work done. Today, it was all about math, which I wasn't great at, but Fred was, so he gave me a hand. With his help, I finished it in no time, and we started our daily tea party where we would relax and discuss my day. I told him about how great my teacher was, and about the art project we did with the popsicle sticks and the cotton balls. Then I told him about how little Jenny Dorner pulled my pigtails at recess. Fred frowned at that and said,
"This Jenny Dorner picks on you a lot, doesn't she?"
I nodded with a bit of a shrug. "Yeah, she's really mean. She bullies an awful lot of kids." Fred didn't seem thrilled about that at all.
"How about I come to school with you tomorrow, so I can protect you?"
I got super excited about that. Fred had never come to school with me before. I quickly agreed, and we went back to our tea party. Fred told me a story from when he was my age, about the time his mom took him to the local candy store. I'd heard it a few times, but it was one of my favorites. We didn't really have any stores like that. If we did, my parents never took me to it. He'd describe all his favorite candy and inevitably pull a piece from his pocket for me to eat. That day, it was a little chocolate turtle filled with caramel and nuts. It was so delicious. We played my new favorite board game, Sorry, for a while until Mom and Dad both came home from work. They checked to make sure I'd eaten and done all my homework, which I had. We all sat and talked for a little while, like we always did before I went to bed. It was the only real family time we had during the week. It took me a little while to fall asleep that night. I was so excited about Fred coming to school with me. The next morning, I woke up and Dad filled a bowl of Frosted Flakes and milk for me. Fred and I quietly waited at the bus stop with a few other kids on my street. And before long, we were at my school. I gave him the grand tour of my classroom, which consisted of the rack where I hung my coat, the cubby holes we used for homework, and nice little messages that our teacher, Miss Newman, would put in there. Then I showed him my desk. Bobby Darnell usually sat next to me in class, but he was absent that day, so Fred sat there. He seemed every bit as excited as I was when class got started. During the first part of the class, we started learning a little about the solar system. This really made me happy because I loved looking at the stars at night. I often dreamed of being the first woman in space when I grew up, living among the stars. Fred just kept smiling and looking around the room while Miss Newman was explaining the Milky Way. Timmy Wersher made a comment about candy bars, and just about everyone laughed, even Miss Newman. Eventually, it was time for lunch, so Fred and I filed out with the class and headed to the cafeteria. I was probably one of the few people who liked cafeteria food, while many of the other kids complained about it. Since it was Friday, it was pizza day, which was my favorite. They always served it with fries. I opted for the chocolate milk over the juice. I offered some to Fred, but he said he wasn't hungry. Once I was all done eating, we headed out to the playground for recess. I introduced Fred to the few friends I had. He smiled and waved to them, but they just giggled and looked a little confused. Jenny Dorner didn't take long to corner me in the jungle gym with her little group of bullies. Fred frowned when Jenny pulled my pigtails again, and her friends laughed at me and called me names. When it was over, I turned around to commiserate with Fred, but he was gone. That's when I heard a series of pained screams echoing across our little concrete jungle. It came from over by the monkey bars. I rushed over to see what was going on and saw all her friends standing there, crying and shouting for Miss Newman, who came running and picked up Jenny to take her to the nurse. Part of a bone in Jenny's arm was exposed, having shredded through the skin in a few different locations. The white of those bones stained red is something I will always remember. According to her friends, Jenny had apparently climbed on top like she always did, but this time, she'd somehow fallen off. Her friends swore up and down that someone had pushed her, but no one ever owned up to it. Right after it happened, I saw Fred standing by the monkey bars with a big smile on his face. The rest of the school day went by in a blur. All the other kids had a hard time concentrating because of what happened to Jenny. Ms. Newman gave us a good talking to about safety to ensure something like that didn't happen again. The best part of the day, though, was not getting any homework. That meant I could play with Fred all weekend. 6 months later, Fred and I were playing out in the front yard. We were digging for treasure, one of our favorite summer pastimes. Our neighbor had the meanest dog you'll ever see, and they usually kept it chained up in the backyard. I was terrified of that dog. There had been a few near bites over the years. I heard the snap of a chain and looked around in horror. The next thing I knew, there was a huge pit bull staring me down and growling. Drool was oozing down its face. I got up quickly and ran, but it clamped down on my leg, tearing my skin with a wet, audible rip. I cried out for my mom, but she must have been doing the laundry in the basement or something. I kicked at it as hard as I could repeatedly with my other foot. At one point, I kicked it so hard in the head that a little blood escaped its right ear, and it let go for a moment. I had just enough time to dart across the street as quickly as I could. It recovered quickly and was only a few feet behind me when I turned to look. I knew in my heart that was the day I was going to die. I vividly recall a car slamming on its brakes, its tires squealing deafeningly. The dog never stopped coming for me. Even as the out-of-control car's front tires greedily pulled it beneath them, I saw what remained of the dog, spread halfway down the road by the time the car finally stopped moving. Even in a state of shock, I still couldn't help but notice Fred standing next to that car, smiling at me as I bawled my eyes out. I remember another time when I was a few years older. Dad had lost his job when the factory shut down and started drinking a lot. While it was nice to have someone home when I came back from school every day, he was mean sometimes. One day I came home and walked in on him wrestling with our neighbor, Miss Judy. Dad got mad when he saw me and slapped me so hard I dropped my book bag. I left it there on my floor and ran up to my room. I cried all night and didn't even want to leave my room for supper, but Mom made me. When she asked me what was wrong, I told her I just had a bad day at school. Dad told me that if I told Mom what happened, I'd get it worse. I'd never been afraid of Dad before, but he'd been so different lately. After dinner, I went back to my room, where Fred was waiting for me with a frown. We talked for a little while about what happened. Fred kept all my secrets for me. I was thankful for that. Everyone needs someone they can talk to about everything in their lives. The next day, Dad didn't make me breakfast. He was passed out in bed, drunk. I made a bowl of cereal and went to school. When I came home, I found Dad wrestling with Miss Judy again. I tried to just sneak by this time, but Dad caught me. I screamed as he chased me all the way up the stairs. Just as I got to the top, he grabbed me by the book bag slung over my shoulder and pulled. I fought as hard as I could, not wanting my father to hurt me again. That's when the strangest thing happened. Dad just let go. I glanced over my shoulder as I moved, just in time to see Dad falling down the stairs. I noticed Fred was there, watching too. I rushed down the stairs after him, Even though he hurt me, I still loved my father and didn't want to see him hurt. By the time I caught up with him at the bottom of the staircase, Miss Judy was screaming. I remember shaking my father and screaming as his blood drenched my school clothes. His neck had been torn open when his head was forced into a 180-degree angle during the fall. Miss Judy called 911, and before long the police and paramedics showed up. My mom wasn't too far behind. Dad's funeral was a few days after that. I spent a lot of time crying in my room while Fred consoled me. We'd become closer than ever during those few months. By the time I turned 15, Mom remarried. At first, I was against it, but Daniel was really a nice guy. He didn't drink like my father, and he took great care of Mom and me. I still saw Fred a lot, but the connection between us felt increasingly strained. He changed over the last year or so. It was a little weird that I still had an imaginary friend at my age. I didn't talk about him to anyone, though. The last thing I needed was people making fun of me or thinking I'd lost my mind. Fred still helped with my math homework when I needed it. He was a genius when it came to math. He'd taken to relaxing in the bed at night while we talked, and sometimes I'd pass out with him there beside me. It seemed so innocent. I thought little of it. I owed Fred a lot, to be honest. He'd been there for me through so many dark times in my life.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
One morning, I woke up undressed. But for my life, I couldn't remember removing my clothes. I was kind of sore all over, too, which was odd. It was a Saturday, thank God, so at least I didn't have to go to school. I made it a bed day, so I could relax and recuperate. That day was uneventful. I made it to the kitchen for meals, but otherwise kept to the bedroom with a book. I didn't see Fred for a little while after that, but I knew he'd been there before I woke up because his distinct smell of baby powder and peppermint still permeated the air in my room. 2 weeks later, I woke up one morning in so much pain I could barely even move. I noticed that there was blood, partially dried, up and down my thighs, and a small congealed puddle where I'd been laying. There were small but deep cuts across my legs and a few on my stomach as well that I just couldn't explain. Just gaping holes staring up at me where my flesh used to be. I barely had the strength to yank my sheets and bedspread off the bed and hide them in my closet. I'd wash them later when no one was home. I didn't know what to do, but talking to my mom about it just felt weird. I had no idea what was happening, so how could I explain it? The only thing I knew for sure was that Fred had to have been behind it. I could smell him all over me. I forced myself into the shower and turned the hot water on as hot as I could make it. I just stood there for a while, scrubbing myself so hard I had to have removed a few top layers of skin. Then I curled up and just cried while the scalding water beat down on me from above. At that moment, all I wanted was to die, for there to be an end to what was happening. How could Fred, my best friend in the world, betray me like this? Why would he do this to me? What was he doing to me? I decided that I never wanted to see or speak to him again. I wouldn't fall asleep tonight. Not that I'd be able to sleep anyway. Eventually, Mom and Daniel left the house, so I threw my sheets and bedspread into the laundry with some bleach. I ended up having to throw out my bedding, though. There was just no saving it. Luckily, I had a ton of replacements for the bed, so I didn't think Mom would really notice. I grabbed a new set, put it all together on the bed, and went down to the kitchen to find something to eat. I stood there in front of the refrigerator for so long that I lost track of time. That cool breeze against my raw skin was soothing. I was so numb that the fact I could feel anything at all amazed me. I ended up not eating anything and just went to the living room to put on the television. I can't remember what I watched. My brain wasn't exactly functioning at full capacity. It was just a blur of random sitcoms, commercials, and reality shows. I stayed that way until evening, when Mom and Daniel finally came home. I must have been the best actress in the world, I thought, as I detached myself completely from my situation and made polite conversation with him. The only thing I knew was that I didn't want to be alone, and I sure as hell didn't want to be anywhere near my bedroom. Mom suggested a family game night, and I was secretly thankful for the excuse to be around them longer. It was difficult to pay attention to the games we played, and I ended up losing every single one of them. By the time Mom realized what time it was just after midnight. She called it a night. She and Daniel were tired from their hike and had a whole day of antiquing planned for the next day. I reluctantly said goodnight and, with increasing terror, made the way up the stairs to my bedroom. I reached a hand in to flip the light switch on before I even entered. I breathed a sigh of relief when I noticed Fred was not there to greet me. I stayed up till the morning sun drifted through my windows. Feeling a little safer with the light of day, I finally fell asleep. I should have known that no time of day was or would ever be safe for me again. The pain woke me up this time. How long I slept, I'll never know. I was willing to cooperate to get myself to safety, or to even scream out for help. I felt like I was trapped inside my own body, powerless to stop what was going on. Fred locked eyes with me and winked, which only worsened things. He made small incisions in my body while he stared deeply into my eyes. He stuffed each little piece of flesh he removed into his cartoonish mouth. No words were said during this, just the sickening sounds of his teeth grinding and tearing those little pieces of me into oblivion. He pressed one of his index fingers to his lips and winked one more time as I passed out from the pain before it was even over. And when I woke up, Fred was gone. I washed the shame and terror from my trembling body with more scalding water, this time scrubbing even harder than I had before. I scrubbed till my skin was so burnt and raw that it bled a little. I threw yet another set of bedding in a trash bag and snuck it into the large bin out front. The trash ran the next day, so I knew Mom and Daniel wouldn't see it. I made my bed again and returned to the bathroom to look in the mirror. There were dark circles under my eyes, and I looked as bad as I felt. I stood there for a while, staring at my reflection, blaming myself for what was happening to me. I'd done something wrong. I must have. Nothing else explained why Fred was doing this to me. This started happening more frequently. A week of respite passed before it suddenly became a nightly routine. The pain would wake me up, and I'd be forced to watch Fred consume small pieces of my flesh. His visage became more terrifying every time I saw him. His once cartoonish features had taken on a much more sinister appearance. Each time, I endured it for longer before passing out again. The look on his face, promising to show me the knife again tomorrow night, was the last thing I would see. It was getting harder every day to hide the wounds, and what little savings I had were going to replace my bedding, so Mom and Daniel wouldn't notice. I was getting to the point where I just wanted to die. I needed peace, and felt like there might be only one way to get it. The following Friday, I grabbed my laptop, went to the family room, and booted it up. I was desperate and searched through various subreddits for any information that might help me. I even posted a little about it, hoping to get some advice. It was apparently the consensus that Fred wasn't so imaginary after all. Since I was the only person capable of seeing him, most people believed he was a ghost. A few hours later, I had more information than I knew what to do with. I went around the house collecting some things that people had suggested. I grabbed a bag of rock salt Daniel kept for the winter out of the shed out back. For the first time in my life, I thanked the gods for my mom's hippie days. She was what you'd call a new ager before I was born, and kept a few boxes from the old days in the attic. I found a Ziploc bag labeled white sage, a pentacle, and some black candles. According to the advice I got, black candles were supposed to banish negativity. The pentacle was for protection, the white sage was to bless and cleanse my house, and the salt was just something I'd seen on Supernatural. It was weirdly comforting to think that I was reenacting a scene from my favorite TV show. I felt stupid walking around the house while I burned white sage in each room. I wasn't entirely sure that any of this would help, but I didn't want to take any chances. When I was done, I went back to my room and burned more. I lit the candles, put on the pentacle, and started putting salt in front of the door and the window in my room. Just for good measure, I even borrowed Dan's Bible and sat there for a little while reading verses out loud. I was an atheist, but at this point I needed all the help I could get. I had everything all cleaned up and aired out before Mom and Daniel got home. I left the black candles burning on the little table next to my bed like I'd been told to do. I was supposed to burn them to nothing and then bury the wax with the pentacle on hallowed ground the following day. I had no idea how I'd be able to dig a hole at the church or the graveyard, but I'd worry about that when the time came. Mom seemed excited about what they had found while antiquing, and I helped her and Daniel unload their finds from the back of his old red pickup truck. I feigned interest as they showed me each one of them and explained what exactly they were, what they were worth, and what they actually paid for them. She even found this cool old vanity for me. Even though I'd been bugging her to find me one of those for years, I just didn't have it in me to be very excited about it. At least, not for real. Of course, I put on a good show. I was getting good at that. Just like every night since my problem started, I found excuses to hang out with them for as long as possible. Mom made some popcorn, and we watched a few episodes of Doctor Who on Netflix. It was another of my favorite shows, and I found a little comfort in watching David Tennant run around like a man possessed. We'd watched 7 episodes before we realized it, and Mom and Daniel went to bed. I began the slow climb of the stairs, half expecting someone to shout, "Dead man walking!" Fred wasn't there, but I didn't really expect him to be. If my plan didn't work, I wouldn't see him till he woke me up in the middle of the night. I booted up my laptop and got sucked into Facebook for a while, and even ended up watching a bunch of random videos on YouTube. When the first rays of morning light came through my windows, I shut off the laptop and lay down on my bed. I passed out soon after. I woke up to movement on my bed and immediately tensed up. My eyes darted to find the source, and I expelled an enormous sigh of relief when I saw my mom sitting there with a sweet smile. I leaned up and hugged her. I was so happy that the plan had worked. She laughed a little and hugged me back. I remember her asking me what had gotten into me, and I made up a silly excuse about not appreciating her enough. We laughed together for a little longer and went downstairs to eat some breakfast. It had been over a week since I'd had a decent sleep, and it felt good. I'd never be the same after what Fred did to me, but at least it was over. Hundreds of small scars across my body would be an eternal reminder. Years went by with no sign of Fred, but I continued my cleansing routine out of habit. I left for college a few years later and didn't visit that much over the holiday. The less time I had to spend in that house, the better. I got married, had a kid, and moved on with my life. Mom died almost 5 years after Christina was born. She'd become extremely reclusive toward the end of her life and was impossible to get a hold of. It hurt me deeply that she'd never wanted to meet her granddaughter. Daniel had broken the news to me kindly, but something about his voice sounded off. All he said was that there had to have been some sort of animal attack on one of her solo hikes while he was at work. When he got home, she was lying in bed, covered in minor cuts and bleeding everywhere. He told me she just kept muttering the word animal repeatedly in a fugue state. Her heart had given out on her way to the hospital after the paramedics had arrived. Daniel disappeared altogether after that, and I got a letter in the mail stating that Mom had left us the house. I thought about selling it, but it was a lot bigger than where we lived, and my husband and I had been talking about having another child. After a few arguments, he finally convinced me it made the most financial sense. So, reluctantly, I gave in, and we moved 2 weeks ago, leaving our tiny two-bedroom apartment behind. I should have fought harder against it. Hell, maybe I should have just burnt the place down the night I got that letter. I knew that what Daniel had told me wasn't the entire story. I could feel it in every little scar on my body. If only I knew then what I know now. 3 hours ago, I went into my old room. It now belongs to my daughter, Christina. She was talking to her stuffed animals and having a tea party. I smiled and started back down the hallway, content to see her so happy. She was only in kindergarten, but it had been hard for her to leave her friends behind. She hadn't made any new friends since we moved here, but I was sure that, given a little time, that would change. I didn't get far from the room before freezing in place, horrified as I heard her sweet little voice say the name, Fred.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2 hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
That was My Imaginary Friend by Raz T. Slasher, as performed by Olivia Steele and featuring Jeff Sturtevant. If there's one thing to take away from tonight's first tale, it's that some friendships never fade. Some bonds refuse to break, no matter how much time passes or how much pain they cause. Raz T. Slasher has long been a staple in the world of horror fiction, crafting tales that burrow under your skin and linger there. If you enjoyed tonight's story, be sure to seek out more of his work. You never know what other nightmares may be waiting. You can find him on Reddit and other social media. That's Raz, spelled R-A-Z, T, Slasher. And with that, let's keep the terror rolling, shall we? Our next tale comes courtesy of Velox Books and the mind of Ryan Major. Roadside motels offer weary travelers a place to rest, brief stop on their journey before moving on. But what happens when a motel room comes with an unexpected guest? One that refuses to leave? From Ryan Major's debut horror collection, I've Done This Before, available now on Amazon and Audible. This story is performed by Jeff Sturtevant. And if you enjoy tonight's tale, be sure to check out more spine-chilling fiction from Velox Books at veloxbooks.com. Without further ado, this is The Hanging Man in Room 3 by Ryan Major.
How the hell do you suppose this happened? The sheriff asked as he wiped the sweat from his brow. No clue, replied the crime scene technician. She snapped pictures. Seems pretty clear he hung himself, but I don't know how long it takes a corpse to mummify. I watched the man and woman examine the dangling corpse as though I wasn't even in the room. They hadn't asked me to leave, and oddly, I didn't want to. The shock of discovering the body had long since passed, and I'd instead been filled with a macabre fascination. Less than 2 hours earlier, I'd stopped at the first roadside motel that I'd seen in hours. Traveling Route 66 had been a dream of mine for years. With the pandemic waning and my work as a copywriter not tying me down, I had taken off without much planning. Motels had been more abundant in Texas and the eastern portion of New Mexico, but the farther west I drove, the less frequently I happened upon one. Even when I did manage to find a place with vacancies, they were often dilapidated and pretty questionable. I did my best to consider it part of the adventure, but some nights I felt better than others. When I pulled up to the crumbling stucco office at the Alabaster Springs Motor Inn, it didn't fill me with an overwhelming sense of safety. The rectangle of motel rooms behind the office seemed a decade past good maintenance, and the lack of cars in the parking lot told me that the other travelers had thought the same. Still, it was somewhere to stay for the night. Dwarvish dirt devils swirled in front of my feet as I walked toward the door to the office. Large chunks of the stucco facade sat in piles on the windowsill and peppered the foundation of the building. Electric whining filled my ears from the flashing open sign above the door. Before I entered, I could see an old man through the dirty window. A yellowed tank top sagged on his bony frame. He absently swatted flies as he watched a rabbit-eared television in the corner. Hello, I said to the man as I pushed open the door. My eyes drifted down to a lopsided name tag pinned to his shirt, identifying him as Clarence. Any rooms available? The slovenly man looked at me and arched an eyebrow.
Empty parking lot should have been a clue,
Clarence replied sarcastically.
Room's 50 for the night. Don't expect much. Ain't got no help no more since Davy run off.
Not knowing who Davy was or where he had run off to, I decided to continue with my business. It was late, and my eyes felt like they had lead weights adhered to them. I approached the counter, pulled my debit card from my wallet, and set it on the counter. Clarence slid it back.
Card read is busted, he said dryly. Cash only.
I curled my lip and placed the card back into my wallet. Thumbing through the bill pocket, I could see that there were only two wrinkly 20s and nothing else. I fished the bills out of my wallet and held them up for the old man to see. I've only got 40, I replied. I can Venmo you the rest later.
That'll be enough,
he spat as he snatched the cash from my hand.
Don't know what the hell a Venmo is, but you can Venmo it something else. Better 40 than nothing.
Tossing me a set of keys attached to a maroon diamond keychain, he pointed me to room 3, to the right of the office entrance. I asked him if it had been cleaned recently, and he muttered that Davy had cleaned it before he left 6 months earlier. No one had occupied that room since. How delightful. After pulling my car in front of my room and unloading my duffel bag, I made my way to the door of room 3. Thick dust clung lazily to the surface and covered my knuckles as I slid the key into the lock. The force required to turn the deadbolt further detailed the place's lack of care. Snapping dryly from the frame, the lock gave way, allowing the door to squeal on its hinges as it opened into the room. Stale, dry air hammered my face, and I could see dots of dust dancing in the beams from the low sun. Breathing was a laborious task in the stifling heat of the room. I tossed my bags onto a metal chair and turned on the window-mounted AC unit before stepping outside. A few minutes to let the struggling unit cool down the oven of a room seemed like my only option. Momentarily, I toyed with the idea of getting into the car and driving until I found another motel, but I had no clue how far that would be. The cell signal was abysmal out here, so relying on GPS or Google didn't seem like a safe option now. I would chance it there for the evening and get on the road first thing in the morning. A night of sleep in a shady motel still seemed better than falling asleep at the wheel. Once I was fairly certain the room's temperature was survivable, I headed back inside. To my surprise, it was a great deal cooler than I anticipated it would get. After returning to the room, my assessment went from irritation to amusement. It was a relic of the 1970s. Formica laminate tables and chairs, a knob-controlled television, and wood grain wall panels decorated the room. The carpet was matted shag, and the yellowed ceiling was covered in popcorn-style texture. I scooped my duffel bag from the ancient chair and headed to the accordion-doored closet beside the bed. Odds didn't seem in favor of a nighttime burglary, but a lifetime of city dwelling had taught me to be cautious of leaving my things sitting out in the open. Maybe my mother had a little to do with it as well. When we traveled during my childhood, I was always made to put my belongings in the closet or dresser. The plastic handle of the fold-away door felt brittle in my hand, so I cautiously slipped my fingers around the frame to give it a push. Jolting away from the wall, the door retracted, revealing a gaunt man staring back at me. I stumbled back and threw my duffel bag at the figure as I fell to the floor. As I pushed myself back across the room, the man remained in place, but began to slowly turn around. He rocked gently from side to side, and when I looked down, I could see his feet were not touching the floor. My eyes drifted back up to his head, which had turned around to stare at the wall of the closet. I could see a rope around the leathery skin of his neck vanish into the ceiling above. The body swayed and turned until it was facing me again. Empty eye sockets now seemed to peer in my direction. Thin wisps of hair and long cracking nails jutted ghoulishly from the taut, papery skin. Thin flakes of dried skin filled the creases in the flannel work shirt. The head drooped, and the open jaw rested on its chest in a silent scream. A syringe dangled haphazardly from the man's left arm. As the body began to turn again, the left foot made contact with my duffel bag, causing the dead man to jerk. Something fell from the body and slid down the side of my bag. The sudden motion from the dangling corpse startled me from my trance, and I bolted from the floor and ran out of the room toward the office to call the police. After taking pictures of the swinging cadaver, the sheriff and crime scene technician retrieved a wallet from the hanging man's back pocket. The driver's license inside identified the man there as David Weldon Shell. The old man from the office, Clarence, identified him by his clothing and a withered tattoo on his forearm. David, or Davy, was Clarence's son. He told the sheriff that Davy had a history of substance abuse, and he had always assumed he skipped town to escape drug debts. Men had stopped by periodically asking to speak to his son, and when they learned he had disappeared, they inquired about his current whereabouts. Clarence had always disappointed them and sent them on their way. I stared in awe the entire time. My life had been an easy one. There were no great traumas to share and no stories of tragedy. My heart swelled with sympathy for the man the newly arrived EMTs were placing in a body bag. I couldn't help but consider that difficult road he had traveled in his life that had led him to this. After the earthly remains of David Shell had been placed in the ambulance, the sheriff offered me a ride to the nearest motel down the road. I thanked him, but told him I didn't want to leave my car behind. He nodded understandingly and jotted the directions to a new motel on a sheet of paper from his notepad. I entered the room a final time to retrieve my duffel bag. Fortunately, I hadn't taken anything else into the room, so my departure was swift. With the door pulled shut behind me, I walked to my car and tossed the bag in the back seat before heading to the office to return my key. When I entered the office, Clarence was staring intently at the TV, fly swatter in hand, just like I'd found him when I arrived. He didn't seem upset in the least about the discovery of his son's mummified remains in room 3. It was like he'd seen it 1,000 times before and couldn't be bothered. "I'm sorry about Davy," I said to Clarence as I placed my key on the counter.
"Don't spend too much time weeping over some deadweight junkie," he responded without looking at me. "Don't weep over your $40 neither. Just because he didn't stay don't mean you get a refund."
His response startled me almost as much as finding the dead man in my closet. I couldn't understand how anyone could speak that way about their dead child. Feeling disgusted, I turned to walk back into the stifling night air.
"Hey!"
Clarence exclaimed as I was opening my car door. He now stood in the doorway of the office.
"You find anything interesting in there after you found Davy?"
"What do you mean?" I asked. The old man rolled his eyes.
"Just any damn interesting thing, you dimwit,"
he barked. I threw up my middle finger at Clarence and settled into my car. He turned to head back into the office and slammed the door. Relief filled me as I pulled onto the road that would lead me back to Route 66 and hopefully a nicer motel. My window was down, and I thought the cool desert air would keep me awake until I arrived. A few days later, I made it to Santa Monica, but the destination had lost its appeal. After the grim discovery hanging in my motel closet, I hadn't been able to enjoy anything. None of the sights had any luster. The food made me nauseous, and even the softest bed made me toss and turn in my sleep. I just kept picturing that dead man swinging in the closet. "Some dead weight junkie," his father said. I decided to go home. The sun was setting beyond the horizon as my tires rumbled down the road. I could see the green sign with white letters showing the turn ahead that led back to Alabaster Springs. An ironwood tree stood vigil behind it, and the thin branches rubbed back and forth over the top of it. My headlights kicked on in response to the low light, and the beams illuminated the skeletal fingers of the tree. It seemed to almost reach toward the road. A lump raised in my throat, and my stomach dropped, as I saw something swinging from the largest branch. David Shell's hollow eyes met with mine as he swayed in the breeze. Noose knotted around the ironwood branch. His skeletally thin arm pointed toward the road leading to Alabaster Springs. I slammed on the brakes, and my car slid into the shallow ditch. My heart hammered against my chest. The engine had died when the tires left the pavement, and I tried desperately to restart it. Over my shoulder, I could hear rhythmic tapping against my window and looked back to see Davy's boot bumping against it. In a panic, I threw my door open and ran to the other side of the road before I tumbled into the shifting dust. As I regained my footing, I stumbled backward and gazed at my car, the ironwood tree looming behind it. Davy was gone. A single low tree branch tapped against the rear window of my car. I vomited onto the pavement. It ran down my face and dripped onto my shirt. Tears welled in my eyes from the acidity in my mouth and the stench of my clothing. Wearily, I glanced at the tree again, but Davy was nowhere to be seen. I staggered back to my car and opened the back door. Rifling through my duffel bag, I pulled out a clean shirt to replace the soiled one I was wearing. After putting on the new shirt, I folded the dirty one and slid it into the outside pouch of my bag. As my hand slid into the pouch, it bumped against something rigid. I grabbed the item and pulled it out to examine it. It was a maroon diamond keychain from the motel, with two bronze keys on the silver ring. Turning it over in my hand, I could see the writing. On one side it said, "The Alabaster Springs Motor Inn," and on the other, "If found, please return to the office." Memories of Clarence and his contempt for his son filled my mind, and I drew my arm back to throw the keys into the dusty field.
Take them back,
whispered a voice. It sounded as though it came from the ironwood tree. I turned to look at it again, but there was no one there. Just my imagination. I drew my hand back once again to throw them into the distance, when something grasped my shoulder and spun me around.
Take them back,
roared the voice from before. Davy stood before me, hollow eye sockets staring into mine. He was in the center of the road, still pointing toward Alabaster Springs. The rope still hung from his neck, and the needle dangled from his outstretched arm. A billow of dust puffed from his mouth as he whispered,
"Please."
Too frightened to ignore the demand, I jumped into the seat of my car and turned over the engine. I smashed the gas pedal to the floor and aimed the car toward Alabaster Springs. In my rearview mirror, I could see the diminishing figure of Davy standing in the road next to the ironwood tree, still pointing.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like blackjack, wanted, dead or wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
After a half hour of driving, I could see the dingy road sign for the Alabaster Springs Motor Inn ahead. The parking lot sat empty as the first time I'd seen it, and the light of the office glowed in contrast to the dark of the evening. Unlike my last visit, Clarence was nowhere to be seen. The television screen danced with static through the window. I put my car in park and surveyed the motel for any sign of life. A light shone through the curtains of a room I was able to recognize as the one I'd previously rented. Room 3. The door was slightly ajar, casting a thin line of illumination onto the sidewalk outside. Cautiously, I approached the open door and pushed it open a few more inches. At first, I couldn't see anyone inside, but heard shuffling on the carpet. Edging the door open a few inches more, I leaned my head in to see Clarence on his hands and knees, examining the closet floor. He was cursing under his breath as his head darted from side to side. "Clarence?" I said loudly. The old man bolted up and turned to look at me. His eyes squinted in an attempt to improve his failing eyesight. A sneer curled his mouth, and I knew he recognized me.
"The hell do you want?"
he asked as he clambered to his feet.
"Here to reminisce about the good times?"
I tossed the keys to him, and to my surprise, Clarence raised his hand and caught them. The old man stared at the keys and smiled. He turned them over in his hand and began to laugh.
Looks like you did find something after all, huh?
He asked rhetorically.
Now get the hell out of here.
Clarence pointed toward the door. I'd expected some word of thanks from the old bastard, but he was just as endearing now as when we had first met. Without another word, I turned to leave the room. As I rounded the corner toward my car, my path was blocked by a silhouette. Davy's withered corpse shuffled in my direction on wobbly legs. As he neared me, I attempted to move out of his path, but wasn't fast enough. A slender arm bolted from his side and wrapped around my arm before sending me reeling out of his way and sprawling into the parking lot. I sat up on the cracking pavement and could see the terror in Clarence's eyes as the corpse turned the corner into room 3. He dropped the keys and held up his hands in a surrendering gesture as his son stumbled toward him. Clarence began to back away, but soon slammed into the wall of the closet.
"I'm sorry, boy," Clarence yelled. "I needed the money, and you wouldn't help me."
Davy continued lumbering toward his father.
"If you would have just gave me a little cash, we'd have both been fine."
Davy removed the noose from his neck and continued forward.
"Damn it, Davy,"
Clarence screeched desperately.
"I shot you up one last time. Ain't that worth anything?"
Davy Shell reached his father and grabbed the cloth of his shirt in a tight fist. The old man punched at the corpse to no effect. Flakes of skin and shreds of rotten cloth fell away after each blow. His dead son's free hand draped the noose around the screaming man's neck and tossed the end over the support beam at the top of the closet. Slowly, Davy began to tug the slack of the rope, and Clarence lifted from the ground.
"I should have killed you when you was just up,"
Clarence said before his speech became a strangled moan. His feet thrashed and his hands grabbed helplessly at the rope, sinking into the flesh of his neck. Davy turned away from his struggling father and picked up the keyring from the matted shag carpeting. He stumbled from room 3 toward the side of the office building in the center of the lot. When he reached a steel hatch leading to the crawl space beneath, he got on his knees and inserted the key. The lid squealed open, and the corpse reached inside, withdrawing 2 dust-covered shoulder bags. Dragging both bags behind him, he returned to room 3 and tossed the bags below his father's feet. Crumpled wads of bills began to tumble from the unsecured packs and slid onto the floor. Clarence dangled in silence above the money he had so desperately wanted. Managing to break my trance, I darted for my car and sped out of the lot. 3 days later, I was finally back home and still reeling from the experience. I slept with the lights on for months and refused to open my closet. After a few weeks had passed, I worked up the nerve to look up the nearest newspaper to Alabaster Springs. There was a headline from the previous week detailing the discovery of a local motel owner who had hanged himself to death in the same room in which his son had taken his life. The article brushed casually over the bags of money. Thankfully, there was no mention of an investigation or concerns that anyone else was involved. At the bottom of the article, there was a picture of Clarence in his younger years. He still looks hateful. And the worst part of me isn't sad that he's dead. Not sure what that says about me, but I'll have to handle that on my own. Next to him is a picture of David. Davy. He's smiling and looks happy. It's a relief to see his eyes, rather than those hollow sockets. I hope he's at rest now.
That was The Hanging Man in Room 3 by Ryan Major, as performed by Jeff Sturtevant. If tonight's second tale teaches us anything, it's that some doors once opened can never truly be closed. Some spirits refuse to be forgotten. And sometimes a motel stay comes with a price no one is prepared to pay. Ryan Major's I've Done This Before is filled with stories just like this one. Tales of deja vu, eerie encounters, and horrors that feel unsettlingly familiar. His collection blends the strange, the macabre, and the mind-bending in a way that lingers long after the final page. The paperback starts at just $14.95 on Amazon, and it's also available as an ebook and audiobook on Audible, featuring narration by our very own Jeff Sturtevant. And of course, tonight's second tale comes to us courtesy of Velox Books. If you're looking for horror that pushes boundaries and delivers truly unforgettable nightmares, Velox is the publisher to watch. With a decade of independent horror publishing under their belt, they built a catalog of chilling, genre-defying fiction from some of the best voices in modern horror. You can explore their offerings at VeloxBooks.com. And just like that, dear listeners, another descent into darkness comes to an end. But before we part ways, I want to thank you once again for joining us on this nightmarish journey where childhood friends turn sinister and motel rooms hold horrors that refuse to be forgotten. If tonight's story sent a chill down your spine, consider supporting Chilling Tales for Dark Nights by leaving us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your fright fix. And for those of you watching on YouTube, a like, a comment, and a subscribe go a long way in keeping the horror alive. Want even more terror delivered straight to your ears? Visit ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and become a patron. For as little as $7.99 a month or even less with an annual subscription, you'll get ad-free episodes, exclusive members-only stories, and early access to new nightmares before anyone else. I'm your host, Steve Taylor. And as always, it's been a thrill guiding you through the darkness. Join us every Monday and Wednesday for more spine-chilling stories so we can once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Until next time, sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.